Hey everyone, this is Christopher, and welcome to a Time Shifters podcast interview special. This one is a little different than my usual interviews. I've typically spoken actors and filmmakers before, but this time I have someone from behind the scenes of a streaming service. Brian Luzil is the VP of Business Development of Mumitu. Now, if you're a regular listener to the show, you've likely heard me mention this new streaming service. Brian will get into exactly what Mumitu is, so I won't get into that now, but what I will mention is what is behind the meaning of the name. Weirdly, it never came up in our discussion. From their website, the Mo is for more opportunities to discover great, often underserved content that might get swallowed up by algorithms on other platforms. Me is for me, the filmmakers and the cinephiles who fight the struggle for adequate representation in a world of mega corporate consolidation. Two is for you in Latin, a nod to our amazing viewers and cinephile audience of people who appreciate the art just as much as the explosions. Okay, now that that is all clear, let's jump into the interview. A huge thank you to Brian for taking the time to talk with me about the service. And I'll go ahead and say thanks to everyone for giving this a listen. Be sure to follow the link in the show notes to check out Mumitu for yourself. Brian Luzil from Mumitu, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
It's an absolute pleasure. Now, there may be people asking, what is Mumitu? So you seem like to be a great person to answer that question.
I was hoping you would tell me what I do. That'd be great. But yeah, Mumitu, it's a free streaming app or streaming platform, depending on who you're talking about, streaming service. And we are a platform that's mainly focused on the underserved content. So looking at independent films, looking at content that is international, so from countries all over the world, and we actually keep things in the original language with English subtitles. And then we have a fair, expansive collection of classic content as well. But you can find Mumitu for free within, as long as you're within North America. And you can find it on pretty much every streaming avenue you can find. So smart TVs or streaming devices such as Roku, Fire TV, Apple TV, Android TV. You can even download it on your phone, and you can even find us on the web. The only place you can't find us is going to be on like Xbox and PlayStation, so like gaming devices right now.
Is that the just restrictions right now, or just...
It's just where our app is, how we have it built out. We can eventually build it out for gaming systems, but there's not a very high percentage of people that are using gaming systems for their streaming purposes. So we just, you know, we kind of went after the more popular devices.
Excellent. Gotcha. Now, how did this this service come to be?
Well...
Is there a short story?
There's not really a short story. Try to make a long story short. You know, during COVID, streaming kind of, you know, took off, right? People were at home, especially as far as watching content for free. And we looked at that opportunity and said, you know what? You know, it'd be fun to start a streaming app and see how it goes. And we have, you know, relationships with multiple distributors in the industry, and really when we came down to it, we said, okay, there's a lot of streaming apps out there. How can we make something that is different, that is unique? Because we're not just going to just repurpose another app and hope it succeeds. It's not going to happen, especially with the bigger players out there like Tubi and Pluto and Plex and many others that are free out there, right? So we looked at the industry and said, you know what, there is a need for representation for the underserved. And so when we say that underserved term, at least internally, what we mean is, again, independent films. So filmmakers that don't have as much representation, or even if they were to get onto one of the bigger streaming platforms, they don't get the limelight, right? They don't get the focus. They're just kind of thrown into the mix, and hopefully the algorithm picks it up. Which kind of leads into the second thing that's unique about Mumitu is that we don't use algorithms. We actually do all of our curation by hand. And by doing that, we actually make the app look the same for each person. So typically, like, right, if you were to use Netflix, Chris, you go on there and you have a profile, right? And you click on things you like, things you don't like, right when you use the app. And then as you watch things, it builds an algorithm for you and it builds a profile for you. The downfall to that is that you don't get exposed to content that you didn't click on, right? So there's a lot of content that is on even Netflix, which is, you know, the most popular streaming app worldwide, outside of YouTube, that there's content where people get to a point where they're like, I've seen everything. And it's not the case, right? It's just that the algorithm has only shown you so much, and that you're getting to a point where you've watched everything via the algorithm, unless you do a deeper dive, which most people don't, right? They just don't want to take the time. They want to find something and go. They don't have as much time to scroll through. So that's why we did things by hand. We want to make sure that we expose people to content they never knew existed, never knew they loved. And Chris, I'm not sure if you're like a comedy fan or a horror fan or a classic fan, but we make it very easy for our users to discover content that they do love, because it's very easy to click on like a genre, go to horror, and you're in a whole thing of horror, right? But we want to expose you to like Korean dramas and crime, you know, crime dramas and series and such from the UK, and even we have a really cool Western from Australia, right? Like, I mean, when would you ever be exposed to that, right? Yeah, that's kind of how Momitu kind of came to be, you know, just looking at the opportunity of, again, underserved content and then finding a way to present it to people where they could really get involved in content that they never knew existed or never knew that they loved.
Yeah, I think going through the app, my favorite kind of section to go to is the niche categories, and that's where you'll find a lot of those, like you were talking, the independent. I'm a fan of like the backyard independent film, the low budget or the no budget filmmakers.
Yeah,
these people work hard.
So bad it's good. Sometimes, right? But they didn't have the budget to really stretch to, on whether it be the set deck or different locations. They're just working with what they got, kind of thing. Yeah.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, they managed to make a movie, and that movie gets into somebody's hands and gets distributed in some manner. And maybe it's on your service. Maybe they're just selling DVDs, and then finally someone comes along and says, well, we can put it on and stream it here. And those are the things that I love. And yes, sometimes they're rough and sometimes they're not that great, but every now and again, you find that gem that you just fall in love with. And then you kind of like, I'm going to see if there's anything more from this person.
Absolutely. And really what people don't kind of keep in mind is that when they think of very prominent directors or filmmakers that they know of, what were they doing before you knew them, right? And that's really, it's funny, like you look at like Peter Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Peter Jackson's like one of his first films. We have one of his first films on Momitu. The name of it's not coming to mind right now, but I can find it. But I'll find it while we're on here. Either way, you know, with Peter Jackson, he's made tons of films, right? But everyone knows him for the big studio pictures that he makes now, right? So you have to look back into their catalog and really see how did they get there. And sometimes it's by making, again, like a low budget, whether it be a short film or making an indie, like a full feature, but it's just doesn't have the quality like some of the studio films have. You know, you got to kind of look back and see where they got their start. So we really love representing those types of films because you never know who's going to be the next, you know, Peter Jackson or Steven Spielberg, right? Or James Cameron, or, you know, so it's just like, you never know. So you gotta hope for the best. And they're out there, trust me. We just did a premiere for a film in March. We premiered it on Momitu. We had it exclusive for 3 months, a movie called Stupid Games. Uh-huh, it was directed and produced by a duo. Did you see that one?
I did.
Have you seen that one on Momitu? Great. So fun facts about that one now that you've seen it. You know, actually, you know what? I won't even tell you. What do you think the budget was on that film? Unless you know.
No, I don't remember. If I knew, I don't recall anymore. But I know that it was effectively a single set shoot, and it's kind of more of a. It felt like just a group of friends that got together and decided to do a movie. So I'm guessing it was, if it was 20,000-25,000, I would be, you know, kind of surprised.
Yeah. So when we premiered the film, we actually asked some people, and some of people were giving us numbers of like 200,000, 150,000, 100,000. This film all in was made for less than $10,000.
Oh, fantastic.
And they obviously had to pull some favors and do that, right, to make it look how it did. But the director and producer duo of Nicholas Wendell and Danny Abraham, they got the opportunity. They got approached and said, hey, we can give you 10 grand to make a film. Would you want to do it? And they kind of said, hey, let's take a chance and
give it a try.
You know, and they got together with their friend Tanner and said, Tanner, can you write a script? And he's like, hey, I got this idea in mind. I can write this. And he wrote it within a few days. And it was just like, it was wild how it all came together. I got to host the Q&A at the premiere. So it was fun to kind of learn more about it. But to see what they were able to do for such a low budget film, I mean, it's incredible. And yeah, there's some moments, right, where you can tell like, hey, you probably did that in one or two takes, right? You didn't have as much time. They filmed it in 6 days.
I mean, that is really
impressive. And the score that they got, they worked with someone that did the score. It was absolutely incredible. They had a person that hand drew the artwork for their poster, someone from Europe that they had a connection with. And so all that to say, that film would have never gotten the limelight, right? It never would have gotten a premiere. It never would have gotten the PR, the social media push that it did. And after the 3 months that it spent time with us, it got some notoriety. It got a bunch of reviews. Now it's picked up on other streaming platforms. And it was actually like a top 20 horror film. I think it actually made it into the top 5 horror films at the time when it premiered on Tubi. I mean, it was really seen by a lot of people, and it honestly may or may not have ever been seen by that many people if we didn't give it a chance and give it that love from the beginning. So we love working with filmmakers like that. You know, another. Let me, if I can share another story. I love
to absolutely
share stories about some of the successes that we've done so far with, and it's not our success; it's the filmmaker's success. We had another one that we actually was one of the first exclusive premieres that we did back in December, and it was a low budget sci-fi film. Again, like $13,500, I think $15,000 all in if you include their film festival runs that they did with it, right? And it was this black sci-fi thriller that it got some looks, it won some awards. I think it's won about like 10 to 15 awards throughout the film festival circuit over about a year's time. And it got some looks from a distributor. They had a 3-month window to kind of sell it, and no one wanted it. No one wanted to pick it up. It was so weird, right? Like, there's so many platforms out there now. I don't know if it was a lack of interest or a lack of just presentation or whatever it was, but it never got picked up. And my wife and I actually went up and saw it in Hollywood at one of the last film festivals that it was in, and they won like best director there and best sci-fi movie there at the Silicon Beach Film Festival in Hollywood. And I just said, hey, once your 3 months is up, let's talk. I think I would love to premiere it on Momi too and just give it some love. And sure enough, we put it up. We did some PR around it. We did some social media push around it. It got watched. And 2 months later, a producer approached him and said, hey, I want to make another movie. We loved what you guys did. Do you have another script ready? If so, we can make a film within the next 2 months.
That's brilliant. What's the title of that one?
So that one's called An Electric Sleep.
Okay.
And that is also on Momi too. It was made by Theo Brown.
On my list to check out now.
Yeah, it's a great little film. And again, great filmmakers. They got very creative during COVID to make this film. I think they made it over the span of 2 to 3 years just because of COVID and like not being able to do things in person and then editing and all, just piecing it all together, right? So, yeah, I mean, super proud to be able to represent a film that literally probably would have been put on a shelf because it didn't get sold. And now that film is also, again, it's on Momi 2, it's on Tubi, it's on Afroland TV, and there's probably 5 or 6 other places that it's on. But just, it's incredible to be able to represent, again, these films that are underserved and underrepresented, and to be able to give them life and see these filmmakers get an opportunity to move forward in their careers, that means the world to us. So I hope we get to do that with many more filmmakers in the time of Momi 2.
Yeah, I hope so. And I think what I love about those sorts of films, and for you to give them a chance to kind of be seen by more eyes and everything, is there are times where the parts can be greater than the whole. So maybe the film isn't the greatest film. It's not going to, you know, take the world by storm or anything. But there's people that are going to be able to see, well, but the, you know, the effects were really good, or that particular actor was really outstanding. That it had really good directions. The cinematography, it's all those little bits and pieces that people can kind of see and go, you know, let's see what they can do in this, you know, with this opportunity, or let me talk to this person and give all these individuals an opportunity that they may not have had otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, I remember one of the quotes from Ben and Theo. We had them actually premiere it at Cal State Long Beach with some students. So they got a sneak peek before it actually went live on Momi 2, and got a chance to do a Q&A with the students. And I remember them saying that it was like, you know, we did everything we could to make it look like a movie. And it was like, you know, you had to get really creative, like with even like the number of hours that people were going through. I mean, I think they did like 40 pages in a day at one point. They only had so much time with this house that they used, so they had to get really creative on filming it and kind of like, was that take good enough? All right, let's move on, right? Like it was one of those kind of things. And so they did what they could with the budget they had. And but again, great to get that movie off the ground and have it be seen. And I really hope that we can and do that for more filmmakers and be almost known as a place that does this, right? Like be known for like, hey, this is where we got our start kind of thing, and build a community around that.
I've got friends that are independent filmmakers that I'm absolutely going to be dropping a few names. Like, hey, I got someone you should contact.
I love that. That's great. Thank you so much for that, Chris.
Oh, absolutely. I'm definitely going to let them know about this.
Yeah, I mean, and we're still getting our start. I mean, we're only about 9 months in. I think we're in month 10 now, and it's going to take some time to be able to get films represented and seen by more people. Yeah, I mean, we're always willing to take a look at a film and see if it's a good fit for what we're doing, and if we can represent a filmmaker and have them be seen. Absolutely, we're here to do that. I just looked it up real quick, but Bad Taste, that was Peter Jackson's film back in the 80s.
Okay. I was thinking, wasn't Dead Alive was one of his early ones too? That was the first one that came to mind when you started talking about early Peter Jackson.
Yep. So sorry. Just wanted to make sure I added that in. But yeah, I mean, there's so many filmmakers out there, and being able to give, like, obviously we have to look at the quality of the film, right? We have to look at the quality of the audio and the video and make sure that it's going to work. I mean, stuff that we have back from like the 80s and 90s and early 2000s, like, yeah, there's going to be some stuff that's got some quality that's not there completely. But that's mainly because of the equipment that they had available to them at the time, right? And they kind of had to do what they could. My father was actually a filmmaker, and that kind of one of those behind the scenes things about why we started Momi 2, and it's really more of the passion that I have to do what we do, is because I grew up on film sets, and I you know, my dad was a director and producer, and I go to do these moments of like, man, if my dad had access to what we have available today for streaming, and to be seen. I mean, my life would have been totally different growing up too, right? So, you know, for him, when he had a film, he had to go to a theater and work a deal and prepay for all the tickets ahead of time, and then go out mm-hmm. and sell them on the street and try to fill a theater, right? So, just to have it be seen by one theater full of people at one showing. I mean, what we're able to do and have people, you know, we can watch a movie from our computer. We can watch it on our television. We can even be on the go and on you know, in the airport or even at work and watching something on our phones. I mean, it's unreal the level of access that filmmakers have their content be seen. And so if we can help even just bridge the gap of that, we'll definitely, you know, deem it as a success.
And you definitely kind of worked yourself into a question I had, was talking about the you know, streaming services, as popular and as strong as they've become in the entertainment and as people, that's how people watch a lot of films now. It's, of course, now people are questioning whether there's room for theaters, you know, anymore, and whether there's room for both theaters and streaming services. And I think you've kind of answered that in a way that what streaming services can do that theaters can't is give voice to some of the smaller films. You don't have to have the you don't have to be Disney, you know, throwing out the or Marvel throwing out the next big summer blockbuster. You can be a backyard independent and still have people see your movie.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's got to make financial sense, right? And sorry, my dog's barking in the background. But I'm sure there's an Amazon driver out there somewhere that he's looking for. So I really feel that, though, there definitely is an opportunity for both to exist. If you asked me in the middle of COVID, like in the first year, I'd have been like, no, theaters are not going to come back. There's no chance. Like, we got this thing we got to live with now that it's, you know, almost like that, you know, that show, what they made off of that, where the kind of the fungus goes in and builds within people and they become kind of like these creatures, zombie things.
Oh, right. Well,
I know you know what I'm talking about.
I just watched this one. Maybe the film you're talking about.
No, it's not a film. It's a series.
Oh, a series. Okay, sorry.
It was a series. But the names, I go through so many names all the time. But it's got the guy from, he's in the Star Wars series, and he's, he's got that crazy meme with, where he's in the back of a car. Why is his name blanking me?
It's probably there's people listening to this and just yelling the name, and
they're probably yelling the name, but now it's gonna kill me, because I'm gonna have to look it up, and I have Google right here, so why not? Pedro Pascal. So again, to get back on track, COVID was literally that at the time, and I was like, no, theaters are not coming back, there's no chance. I even remember talking to a filmmaker, and I was just like, what are you guys gonna do now? Like, theaters aren't a thing anymore. Like, they're going away, and it's like, it's all streaming now. Like, what are you gonna do? He's like, nah, theaters are gonna come back. And I was like, I don't know. Like, you know, so we were so deep into it at that time. And so it's like, now you may not have as many theaters, right? Like, there's gonna be theaters that close down, and they already have, right? Mm-hmm. There's already been some that have shut down, number of locations and such, but there is still a not a nostalgic feel. I mean, for me it is, just because, you know, for you, we grew up going to theaters to watch movies, right? But like, there's a different feel and a different vibe you get when you're in a theater.
Oh yeah.
Especially when you get like the 4K, you get the full experience theaters that have the
feel the sound,
you
know,
the air blows on you. They like the wetness, and like, you get the smells and all that stuff. I mean, you know, I just had someone that watched Alien Romulus, right? And then they had things that they were feeling as they were like, as the little, I can't remember what they call them in the movie. I haven't seen it yet, but the little aliens that come after, and they attach onto your face, right?
So the face huggers
again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those little things. So it's like, But there were things that she said, like, she could feel during the movie, like, as she was watching. I was like, that's so trippy, right? So just that experience alone, you know, what they're able to do in theaters now, you can't get that at home. And I'm kicking myself that I wasn't able to even watch Avatar 2 yet, because I want to watch it in a theater, right? Like, I don't want to watch that movie at home. And I'm still waiting for a theater to bring it back so I can make sure I get out to it and see it. But yeah, I mean, there's something that you just get from a theater that you don't get from your television. You don't get from your phone. You don't get that from a computer screen, right? So is there a world for both? Absolutely. And you have to, but it has to make financial sense for the filmmaker, right? You know, the studios can buy out the spaces in theaters, right? And the theaters are more than willing to have them. But independent filmmakers can't do that. It just doesn't come around.
I think my favorite story during the pandemic, there's an independent filmmaker that managed to go and like buy up all the seats in the theater. It was a local theater or something like that. And because there was no other movies going on at the time, his film was the number one box office for that weekend.
That's awesome.
Mamito just recently launched a new ad campaign, which I think is pretty brilliant. And you sort of hinted at the basis of it through your conversation, but you tell the listeners more about this new campaign.
We came out with this campaign and actually it was we were talking with our PR team about ways we could really bring, you know, users to know who we are. And the biggest thing that we wanted to look at was, okay, we want to differentiate ourselves as a platform that is free. And we don't want to attack our brothers and sisters in the free streaming space at all. We respect them, and the fight is definitely a hard fight. But we came with this idea and said, okay, well, who are we not? And that was really what it came down to. I said, you know what? We're not these subscription services. We are a free streaming service, and we always want to be free. We have no aspirations at adding a subscription tier to get rid of ads and all that stuff. I mean, we want to make sure Momi2 is available to all people at all the time, or as many people that we can reach, right, with the devices that we're available on. So we looked at that, and we just kind of came to this conclusion. It's like, we're not Netflix. I can't remember who. I think it was Stacy on our team that threw it out there. And you know, we're not Netflix, and we're not Hulu, and we're not Peacock, and we're not this, and we're not that. And like, obviously, we're not trying to go after anyone. Like, we respect, and I personally use Netflix and Hulu myself. But we came out with the "We're not Netflix. We're not Hulu. We are Momi2." And we wanted to make sure we leaned into the values of what we are, and we're free, we're independent, right? We're not owned by a big studio or a big company or a big corporation. We're just this little mom and pop type shop, in a sense, that started up, that wanted to support filmmakers. And at the same time, we wanted to make sure people knew that we are hand curated. Making sure they knew that we take the time to really put some effort into making sure people see some content that they really never would get exposed to on other platforms, whether they exist on there or not, right? You know, I've been in some different live chat rooms, whether it be on different different social media platforms, and you know, I'll mention a movie that we have, and someone will be like, "Oh, it's on Tubi," and I'm like, "Yeah, it probably is on Tubi. Like, that's okay. But how much have you used Tubi and never gotten to see this film, right? Like, never even knew that it was even on the platform, right? The person actually took it and searched it and was like, oh, it's on this platform." And it's like, well, yeah, it is. But the algorithm may not present it to you. And that's what we come in. We really want to take that time to really make sure people see the types of films that never get seen.
And I know the... going through that effort to do the sort of self-curating and everything has got to be a bit of a task. I appreciate that you guys go to that kind of effort. I am curious a little bit how that process works, though. Is it, you can't possibly watch everything that comes to the service and decide, oh, people need to see this, or oh, maybe not so much that one, or or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, no, I definitely have not seen over 10,000 titles on our platform now, personally at least. Will I get there one day? Probably not either. It's like, that's why we have a team to do so. I can't give away all of our secret sauce, but as far as just even the acquisition standpoint, right? We work with a bunch of different distributors and filmmakers and to bring content on. And when we're going through it, like, for instance, let me just give you an example. I had a distributor that came to me and they gave me a list of 500 titles. And they said, I think these 500 would fit within what you're doing, blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay, let me look through them. So I looked through the metadata, which for those that don't know what metadata is, it's almost like an Excel spreadsheet of the title and the director, producer, the actors, the plot and the what language it's in and all the different information about the film. And so I looked through the metadata and then make sure there's things that, like, we don't want to represent, right? So, like, we don't have kids content, right? The stuff on Momi 2 is mature. I would say 16 plus is kind of like our demographic, right? 18 plus, depending on what household you're in. but more mature audience, right? So I kind of get rid of stuff like that doesn't fit the mold. Kind of look through it with maybe some stuff that we just have too much of, right? Like, we don't need another documentary about Hitler or Mussolini. And, like, it's like, we got a couple of each. All right, cool. We don't need those, right? So, like, just working through that stuff. And then get down and start looking at, like, posters, like looking at artwork, because if you put yourself as a user, as a viewer, what am I going to see first? You're going to see the poster first and foremost. And then secondly, you may check out the trailer. Some people don't like watching trailers because they don't want to have too much given away, but more than likely a person that's really interested, like, hey, am I going to spend 90 minutes of my day, you know, on this movie without watching the trailer? Maybe not. Some people love it, though. Like, love doing that and going in blind. So I go through trailers. I go through the artwork. And then I'll spot check, like, the audio and video and all that stuff. And when I had these 500 films, we ended up only taking, like, 80 of them. And so there's a lot of work that goes into that to really find the films that we know we want to represent. And we know that it will fit within the mold of what we're doing, or maybe some stuff that we just don't have enough of. So sometimes we're maybe willing to take a little bit more of a chance on content that we just don't, or we're not representing enough. And that's kind of the process of where we get to selecting the films. And then from there, our team, if you look in our, and especially our niche categories, are really unique names and collections of things. We kind of just, our operations teams break things down so that where you can get really fun and make sure it's a little more engaging for the users instead of just the typical, okay, here's some drama, here's some comedy. Like no, here's some werewolves and vampires collection and something that's not just horror, right? Like, we want to get really specific and just kind of engage with our audiences. So that's kind of how we go about it. And then we have some, we do have some machine learning stuff that's built in almost to more randomize the content, but we're not in there like every day moving titles. Like, we set up the collections and then present them that way.
I love that you've said the artwork plays a factor. And I, as someone that grew up going to the video store, what was the thing that was going to get you to pick that, for me, it started out VHS off the shelf, yep, to see and read the back to see what it's about? The artwork. And that is 100%. Something that, you know, the poster or the box art that on a video, it feels at times to be a lost art these days. You know, it's just, oh, here's a silhouette of someone's face and make it red. Okay, great. Thanks. What does that tell me? You know, now I love the old ones where it's like the poster. Oh, that looks amazing. It's not in the movie, but it got you to check that film out.
Yeah. I mean, that's something we actually did with that movie I told you about, An Electric Sleep. They had an original poster that they had, that they used for the festival circuit. And we said, you know what? We think it can be more engaging. We think that part of maybe why it's not getting picked up so quickly right now is maybe it's the artwork. And sure enough, we updated the artwork, made it really cool with this, like, one of these cool features in the film is like where they look up and they kind of start scanning the space in front of them, but it's really coming from like almost like glasses that are kind of built into people's heads. Like, it's not like a special eyewear or anything that comes up. Like, it's not like the Apple, you know, the
Vision Google Pros, Glass, right? Or the Apple,
yeah, it's nothing like that. It's just a thing that you just kind of like look up and it's there, and they start moving stuff around. I mean, it was really cool. So like, we're like, hey, like, that is actually a really cool thing. We need to feature that in the poster. And so right over the eye, there's this like blue glass thing that we had it added in to really make the poster pop. And it's doing well. I mean, people, again, the poster is going to attract you.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we look at posters first and foremost to make sure that, like, if you're looking at a screen full of titles, what is going to make it stand out, you know? And that's actually something that we even educate student filmmakers on. I'm not sure if that's even something that you had in your list of questions there, but we actually founded a film festival for college students.
No, I didn't. That's awesome. I'd love to hear more about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the film festival we created, and again, inspiration from my father being a filmmaker, went to UCLA, and just again the opportunities that he could have potentially had if he had something like this too. There's not really a lot of film festivals out there that are focused on students and up and coming filmmakers, right? These student filmmakers have to compete against very tenured filmmakers sometimes, and very experienced and have access to more money and better equipment and all that stuff. They're just using what they have at their school. They hopefully get a grant if they apply for it, kind of thing, to get some money, or sometimes just have backing from family, right, to help them fund or do, you know, those little things for fundraising, right? So they're making these short films and trying to compete with the real world, which is very difficult to do. So I looked at it and said, okay, we can maybe support them and support their future filmmakers. So we started this film festival for college students called the MOMI 2 College Shorts Film Festival. And what we do is we actually take their films and put them up onto our streaming platform, onto MOMI 2, for an entire month. So they get seen by more people than they ever could have imagined being seen by, instead of just putting it up on YouTube or hoping that some small regional film festival selects them, because they're not getting picked up by South by Southwest or going to Cannes, right? I mean, that's just not in the cards unless they had like a really, really good budget. And they're probably either at like Chapman or NYU or USC or grad student somewhere, right? So we saw the opportunity to support the future of filmmaking, and we put these films up, they get seen. We just did our second festival this past June, and during the month of May, we had 69 films on MOMI 2, represented by 38 different colleges and universities across the nation, and actually one from Canada. We had 7 different genre categories, and the coolest thing about the festival, I would think, in my mind, is that we were able to partner with another company called, at the time they're called V Channels. They just rebranded, their name is now Insurgents. But they actually ponied up a cash prize for one of the films to be turned into a feature film and be directed by a student filmmaker.
Nice.
So super cool opportunity for this filmmaker to be able to make their first feature film. And they literally just graduated from college. They graduated from Ringling College of Art and Design. And so really, really excited for that filmmaker, and we're going to be able to premiere that film on MOMI 2, and I'm hoping that we can actually get it filmed this fall and have it in post and ready for hopefully a trailer ready to be able to premiere the trailer at next year's festival. It would be really cool to have that come full circle. But the reason I come to that from the posters And again, we can talk more about the festival if you want, if you'd like, but the posters, what really cool is that we're able to work with those filmmakers and tell them, like, I remember this one poster in particular, it was called Clicker, and it didn't have, like, it was not engaging. Like, mm-hmm. You could tell this student just threw it on there and just said, hope it sticks. I got something done, right? Said, hey, that's not going to work, right? Like, no one's going to watch your film. And so we hold some educational panels across the time while their films are up. So we talk about filmmaking, we talk about distribution, we do like an open Q&A with all the filmmakers, and we also talk about marketing. And so the marketing aspect of it was, hey guys, your poster is really what grabs people. You got to have an engaging poster. And I will say, at the end of the festival, if you looked at the films that performed the best, they all had engaging posters, right? Now, they're short films, so they don't have any trailers, unless they're longer, but we didn't put trailers up. But either way, that poster is the only thing that's going to grab someone that wasn't told to go watch the film by you, right? Like, so they were able to learn that so that hopefully in the next film that they make, and or the next short that they make, or their, maybe their first feature, or whatever they're able to do, they know that artwork is so important just to grab someone to even give it an opportunity to be seen.
I like that you're kind of giving them an idea of things to think about that maybe they wouldn't think about when they're making their film. I think a lot of people, they might go in as like, oh, great, I've made a movie, I have a movie, now what? You present the opportunity like, okay, well, did you think about, like you said, marketing, did you distribution, artwork, all these things that they maybe all didn't have on the forefront of their mind. You know, they were concentrating on making that film, which they need
to
do.
Well, they're filmmakers, they're not marketers, right?
Yeah, so, exactly.
But you have to be. That's the thing, is especially in today's world, where the barrier to entry now is so inexpensive compared to how much it was 20 years ago to make a film, right? Like, there's people that have made feature films on their cell phones now. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it's a thing, right? I think there was a really famous filmmaker that literally made a feature film on their cell phone, like all cell phones, only iPhones. Mm-hmm. And they obviously were able to increase the frames per second and all that stuff, and they had to, like, you know, download all the stuff off their phone so their phone wouldn't just go to the fritz, right? So, again, it was a very, very lengthy process, but it is possible. You can film a short film easily on an iPhone nowadays. And so just that barrier to entry is so much easier now that you have to differentiate yourself in some way compared to other filmmakers. And, again, what's the simplest way? Well, first is your poster, right? Then we talked to them even about some of the marketing aspects of, what are you doing before you even shoot? Are you writing things into your films? I go to Ryan Reynolds a lot because it's just it's a low-hanging fruit for all the Deadpool movies. But great marketing across the board for Deadpool. But there's stuff that they literally shot just for social media. And I'm not sure if you saw that recently. They released it where Wolverine, you know, Hugh Jackman was wearing... Or no, I think it was actually Ryan Reynolds or someone in a Deadpool costume was wearing the script, was wearing like a big screen. It was just like this thing around their neck, and it had this big poster board in the front of there, and it had Hugh Jackman, he was actually reading his lines off of the card, right? Now, they didn't do that in the when they were doing the movie at all, but like they did this literally just for social media. Mm-hmm. And it was like, are you doing that? Are you filming behind the scenes stuff? Like, there should be someone on your set that is literally just trying to capture behind the scenes stuff, interviews with your actors, your directors, whatever, so you can use that for social media and build that up. Again, just another way to get creative to hopefully attain one more eyeball. And maybe that eyeball has, like, you know, 150 to 200,000 followers on social media, or even sometimes millions of followers on social media. They could say, hey, go check this film out. And all of a sudden you have, you know, another 10,000 people that have seen your film because of something you did, you know, during, you know, behind the scenes stuff for social media. So, again, you just have to, you have to get creative. You have to set yourself apart. And we try to teach these filmmakers that, because, again, they're not learning this in school.
Yeah, they're probably learning more of the nuts and bolts of filmmaking. But like, as you said, now it's not enough to just be a filmmaker. You don't have the army of people that are going to do all the promotions and this and that for you. So you have to be a creative marketer as well as a filmmaker in order to get your stuff seen. And you never know where the big buzz is going to come from. Like you said, you could post a little behind the scenes and get on Instagram or, you know, make it an Instagram reel or whatever. And some talk show host, some celebrity or something happens to come across it and go, "Hey, that's hilarious," and share it. Now you've got all kinds of buzz about this film that you're making.
Yeah, I mean, it's a friend of mine who is not a filmmaker. She's actually a food blogger. But again, it's the same kind of example in a sense where same principle, right? Is that she was working a full-time job, you know, a 9-to-5 job doing, I believe she was doing PR or human resources. I can't remember exactly what she was doing, but she was working for an advertising company, I believe. And she just loved to cook. And it was just one of those things. She had her little blog that she had at the time, which she would call a little blog at the time. And it was like, it was very small and it was just for fun. Like she loved to cook. Like she bonded with her mom over, you know, baking growing up. And, she just literally wanted to make some toast. Like it was so simple. And she thought she had bread at home. So she got all these things to make this toast and this healthy toast. And she got home and she didn't have any bread and she was kicking herself. And then she saw a sweet potato that just happened to be sitting on her counter. She got creative and she's like, "Well, what if I slice that up and toast it? Would it get soft enough, almost like bread? And maybe it's a healthy version of bread." Like she just got creative. And she made sweet potato toast. Sweet potato toast, if you don't know, became like this viral sensation. She put it on her blog. I think she may have put it on social media. One of her friends saw it and shared it. And then like some celebrity saw it and shared it. And all of a sudden she had Glamour magazine reaching out to her to do a full spread. And then she had the Dr. Oz show hitting her up. And shout out to Kelsey, or also known as Little Bits Of. But the cool thing is that she took something that was just like, it wasn't going to be anything, right? Like she was just literally making toast, and it became this viral sensation because this famous person ended up sharing it. And then Glamour, Dr. Oz are showing her up. Now she is a full-time influencer and creator, and I think she has like 160,000 followers on Instagram or something like that. She has her blog. She has her website. She does, you know, promos with all these different companies. And she also gets involved with, she has her own book, like her own cookbook. And she has her own ebook for cocktails and mocktails. And I mean, all of this started from the first thing she did, right? And so now everyone sees all this stuff. Oh my gosh, like look at all everything she's doing, right? Kind of the Peter Jackson reference of earlier. It's like, well, you got to go back to what they were doing when they started, and they were just hoping to make it, right? And it you just never know when you do something who's going to see it and how it can really take off. And I mean, for some filmmakers, gosh, they just get super lucky or just have the right connection. But the relationships you have and with people are just so important, because you just never know who that next person is that's going to help take off your film, or in her case, her toast, right? So.
That's excellent. Well, we're kind of running a little on the lengthy side here and everything. And I know it's getting late in the afternoon for you. It's getting late in the evening for me. So I want to thank you, Brian, for taking some time out of your day to talk to me about Momito, about the festival. Hopefully be sure to send me a link if there is one for the festival exclusively, so I can add that to the show notes and let people know about it. And I just encourage everyone to go check out Momito, and you will find something that you want to watch on this service. There is so much there, and so much interesting things, and you'll find something you didn't know you loved, I think.
Absolutely. Well, that's definitely our goal and our mission to, as we present content again, to expose people to things that they never knew they loved. But yeah, I'll definitely send you the information. If you've made it this far in the podcast, thank you. I'm not that interesting of a person, but I really appreciate you taking the time to get to this point in the podcast. But if you're not already, please follow us on social media. It's at Free Mometu, very simple. So Free and then Mometu. You can find us there on all social media platforms. So just give us a follow, and then, like Chris, I'll send it to you. But if you're looking at the film festival, it's on Instagram only, and that's at Mometu College Film Fest. And but I'll send that information to you. But thank you again for reaching out, and I'm glad that we were able to do this, and hopefully again we can do this in the future.
Oh, absolutely, I hope so. And I also add to anyone listening, if start using the app, whether it's Roku or on your phone or whatever, if you have any questions or any problems, the customer service with Mometu has been fantastic. I was having some issues with the app, and I sent out an email, and I was like, the next day I got a reply, oh, it's probably this, let me, you know, blah blah. I'm like, yeah, that was it, thanks.
So that's
it, kind of
cool.
Blew me away.
I'm glad our support team were able to help you out so quickly. And yeah, I mean, We definitely want to take a lot of pride in each and every user's experience on our platform. So if there's ever any issues, yeah, feel free to hit up our support email or message us on social media, and we'll do our best to get back and hopefully solve your issue if there is one.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, because I'll actually share this too. The movie I was watching, I don't know, of course, now I want to sell the story and I can't remember the name of the film, but it was one of those very low budget, like late 70s, early 80s backyard sci-fi films. And they asked, well, what were you watching? I'm like, well, kind of embarrassed, but it was Alien Invader or something like that. And the reply was like, never be embarrassed about what you love. Like, fair.
Absolutely
enough.
No, I mean, that's the thing, is whether it's a guilty pleasure or not, like, you never know who's going to love what. And I think, you know, for me, when I got married, I found out that, you know, there's a lot that I didn't ever get exposed to, mm-hmm. because my wife's profile is different than mine, right, on the different streaming apps. But her preferences are a lot different than mine, right? Like, and there's stuff that I exposed her to as well that she never knew, you know, existed. And yeah, you just never know. So never shy away from what you enjoy and what you love, because one man's trash is another one's treasure, right? So
exactly. All right, well, Brian, thank you very much again for taking some time and speaking with me today. It's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely, thanks for having me, Chris.